Did you know that oat milk uses a lot less water, less land, and creates far less greenhouse gases than cow's milk? This useful fact is brought to you by Oatly, the vegan oat milk originally from Sweden that's now available in the U.S. You can find out more useful facts than you'd ever want to know about oat milk at oatly.com. That's OATLY.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're ringing in the start of our fifth season with dispatches from Portland, Oregon's biggest food festival, Feast Portland. We're bringing you words of wisdom on launching a food business from food blogs.
Most acquaintances from high school have now tried to start a food or fashion blog in some sense and quit very quickly afterwards.
To ice cream shops.
Every city you go to, the Salt and Straw is completely different than any other city.
We'll bring you insights and anecdotes about the business of the business.
We were like, cool, we're going to do this. We're going to try to raise $75,000 and we'll see what happens. And it was like the most gut-wrenching, miserable month.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Kara Rubin, Vice President, Brand and Product Strategy of Just Water. Prior to joining Just, Kara spent a decade leading one of the largest regional business units for Whole Foods in the United States. Kara has also done independent strategic advisory work with clean label brands and natural channel retailers. She's been an advisor to the Rockefeller Foundation on the topic of food waste, and she's a lecturer at the NYU College of Food Nutrition and Public Health and the Institute for Culinary Education. She's also a mentor to entrepreneur cohorts in the Food Future and Village Capital Accelerators. You have like a very, such an impressive resume that I couldn't pronounce the words. It's like very grown up, lovely resume. I'm super psyched you're here. Welcome.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You have so much experience, and I definitely want to talk about Just, and I want to talk about your role there and all the things you've learned. But I also think for our listeners, your decade plus of experience at Whole Foods and consulting like other brands is going to be super helpful. Mm-hmm. But before we get into all of the amazing things that you have to tell us, you grew up in Maine.
Yes.
And were you a food person? Were you a brand person? Did you think you wanted to be in food? Do you remember even knowing what you wanted to do?
I don't, you know, I'm one of those people, I guess, who had a very long and circuitous route to the place I've landed or landed 15 or so years ago at this
right.
point. I was listening to one of your other episodes earlier, and the Mike Messerschmidt from Oatly mentioned that he asked his parents.
Yes, he didn't remember what he wanted to be.
Because I didn't either, so I
you
took his, I followed
what,
his lead.
Really?
I have a pretty vivid memory of one moment, I don't know, it must have been 6, 7, 8 years
right.
old, something like that, declaring in the backseat of the car that I wanted to be an astronomer.
Okay.
My mom's recollection was either a teacher
right.
or an architect.
Yep. Interesting.
And all those, I remember moments where you...
Yeah, and I can see that. I wouldn't see you as being, I want to be a stand-up comedian or...
No, I'm not a performer.
Or a conceptual body artist.
No.
Yeah, no, I can see architect or teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I think there are, it's always easy to see, like, read the tea leaves in hindsight.
Yeah.
But, you know, my grandfather ran a small butcher shop,
mm-hmm.
grocery store in
yep.
the little town in further north in Maine, where I'm second generation Mainer.
Yeah.
And you know, I think when I think back on the why I decided to get into food in the first place,
right,
15 odd years ago, I just find the stories that people
yeah.
you know
yeah.
what impact their lives really compelling. And so much of that can be tied back to food and culture. And
it's why I went back to school to study food, because I think for those of us that are interested in history or religion or, you know, gender issues or class issues or any sort of like anything about people and about the way people organize themselves and how to help people, it really does come back to what they eat and what they drink and what they have access to and what they grow and what they share together, who they'll eat with, who they won't eat with, you know. So food is food, you know, I mean, food is everything.
Exactly.
And then you ended up going to Duke, which, again, I don't know how I keep having Duke. Duke should be sponsoring the podcast. Hey, Duke. I don't know why we have so many people on here from there, but it's just kind of weird. But you did not study anything related to business or food or branding or marketing. You studied English and women's studies.
Yes.
And did you think you were going to be, like, I thought I was going to be a college professor. Did you think you were going to go into teaching, or did you?
You know, no, not teaching at that point. I think I toyed with the idea of maybe publishing. You know, it was a long time ago.
Yes. We're the same age.
I'll give with that. But, you know, it's interesting being this age and realizing how, you know, you have kids. I have little kids, and thinking about their paths that they're setting out on in the world, and how many phases we go through, right? Yep. Like, it's not
even more so
it's
now.
It's so unnecessary to have
a to know
path
what you want
laid
to do.
Out so clearly, because life happens to you, and to allow yourself the space and the flexibility to change your mind and realize that you've this is awesome. I hadn't thought about that before, and I'm going to go in that direction now. And not beat yourself up about it because you've spent so much time doing something else.
Because one of the things that I've definitely learned doing the interviews for this show is that everything that you've done in the past does bring you to where you are now.
100%.
And like you know, Mike's example, like his work in the military taught him a lot of lessons that were very applicable to leading a team in consumer packaged goods, or, you know, all of the different stories that people have, which is why I kind of like asking about the story, because it does inform what you bring. I mean, you know, and knowing your personality type and how it fits into like your experience and then into what you're doing now. And I think, I think one of the big things that keeps people back from trying new things is that they think, well, I'm not a fill in the blank, you know, me, I'm not a businessy person, you know, maybe I am a businessy person. What does that even mean?
Yep.
You know, as you grow into it, you kind of learn that there isn't, you know, save for like, I'm probably not going to launch a rocket in this lifetime, you know, because I probably would have.
And that's okay.
That's okay.
It's all right.
So you were in the nonprofit world when you graduated. Mm-hmm. And then how did you decide to go to business school? And why did you go to business school?
You know, I don't have a good answer to that. I think I wanted to. I was working in, I had traveled through the Middle East. I spent a lot of time in Israel after graduating from school. The nonprofit work that I ended up doing was related to that. And I think I wanted to find, I know I remember writing an essay about wanting to find a way to come at that sort of arena, but from a for-profit angle in some way.
You're also not the first person that's gone from nonprofit to profit on this show too.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting that the, again, circuitous path, but I've landed in a place where the, you know, the ethos, the reason that there's a, you know, purpose driven is a term and a you know, it's a real driver of a lot of businesses these days, that idea of finding purpose, and it's real. That's absolutely a real thing. That's another thing that, like, I'm just thinking about this now, that's a bit of a common denominator. But anyway, that was my thought process going into business school. The one piece of advice if anyone thinks to ask me, you know, why go to business school.
You are the guest on the show, so this is your arena.
The one piece of advice that I typically give is be super clear about what it is you want to get out of it before you go into it. Because honestly, I didn't.
Right.
And, you know, I was in business school also a long time ago.
Right.
And at a time where the, you know, the technology industry was taking off, and I had no idea what that all meant.
Right.
I went to Michigan. You know, it's a fantastic program. There are a lot of people coming at you with all sorts of different opportunities. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to get distracted.
Right.
Or lose your focus.
Right.
And if you do, especially if you don't have it going in.
Do you remember the part of business school that, like, one class where you were sitting there and you're like, oh, this is cool. Like, do you remember that at all? Or was it just sort of, you were there and you felt a little lost, and at least maybe you graduated with a degree and some contacts? Like, how, what, you know?
I took a lot of satisfaction in, I felt like I was learning a couple different languages at once.
Right.
You know, I didn't, accounting.
Yeah.
New,
yeah, you were in English and a women's
new
studies
vocabulary
major.
For
yeah.
me. So I think, you know, and they're, one of the things I liked about Michigan was that they're, you know, they were actually interested in having someone like me with the background that I had at that point in time
yes.
be part of that class.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people with a lot of different backgrounds, yeah. a handful of people who'd come from the nonprofit space.
Right.
And there are also, you know, plenty of people who right. had come from finance or management consulting and were intending to go back in that direction. And
right.
this is a box they had to check, and maybe
right.
their companies were paying for it. This
yep.
was completely new landscape for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was an enormous learning experience. One that I really value. But I think it's also one that, you know, I wouldn't say I have regrets, but
right.
if I were going to redo it, I'd do
maybe
it differently.
Skip it, yeah.
Or I don't know about skip it, but
right.
do it differently.
Got it. And then how did you end up, did you go straight to Whole Foods after that? Or
no.
Yeah. So what was next?
Twisting path.
Yeah.
I ended up, I think I was working for a consulting firm, like standard sort of management consulting firm
mm-hmm.
for a bit. I ended up working for a private equity firm for a minute.
Wow.
But none of which resonated with me, and it was a lot of, you know, the universe pointing me in ways that I wasn't necessarily really conscious of how it was
yep.
happening. But you know, those jobs were just ultimately, you know, fundamentally not right for me. And over time, though, I was developing an interest in, I live in New York City, like, you know, this incredible place to explore
yeah.
things related to food. And it was the beginning of what's now this fundamental part of the zeitgeist, I think.
Yeah.
This, you know, conversation.
So this was like around 2000 or like a little?
Yeah.
Right.
A couple years after that. Was it 2002, 2003
right.
or so? And I actually, this was a not just a windy part of the path. It was a hard right turn.
Right.
I decided to move back to Maine for I wasn't sure how long.
Right.
There's a small importing business up there called the Rogers Collection. And
I know the Rogers Collection.
Yep. Amazing.
Yep.
And I was able to work with them to get my foot in the door, and I worked for free for
wow.
2 or 3 months, I think it was, and
yeah.
then I worked for a very nominal paycheck for
right.
the balance of that
just
year.
To be in the world of food business,
just to do it,
yeah,
get my foot in the door, and that was an extraordinary opportunity to
yeah.
To get that initial education and the network.
Yes.
Honestly, that's where yep. my food network began.
Yeah, very cool.
And
then
I came back.
Yep.
I worked with the team at Gourmet Garage, actually,
uh-huh.
for about a year and a half as a buyer.
Yep.
And at that point, the opportunity at Whole Foods came up, again, serendipitously through
no, I mean,
the network. I happened
so cool.
to meet the guy who was the store team leader at the time at Union Square,
right.
and he let me know that there was a job opportunity open, and I was fortunate. This is a regional position. My job title over my decade at Whole Foods didn't actually change
right.
much. I think I started as an associate and ended up being the director. But the region itself grew tremendously.
Right.
I started when there were about 13 stores, I think, in
wow.
the Northeast region, and now there are
44.
Close to 45. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And so what was your job basically for those 10 years, more or less?
So I was focused solely on what's basically the center of the store, the grocery department. So that's all dry goods, dairy, frozen and bulk products, the things you put in the nuts.
Is it what John now is?
John was on my team. Right. He was the buyer when I was there, and he still is.
Right. Got it. And so, I mean, this is where I want to get kind of into nitty gritty, because you've seen so many brands and you've watched it, I mean, for almost 20 years. And my guess is that there's some common denominators of what you've seen that really has worked and probably what you've seen that really hasn't worked. And, you know, if you can just sort of like hover over that, you know, two decades and think like, okay, you know, what are the biggest mistakes that you've seen brands make? Things that had potential legs, brands that had good products and good people and didn't make it. Like, what do you think were sort of like the root problems? And then separately, you know, what do you think that those of us, you know, those of us that are like trying to succeed can do to really get, you know, get over each tranche as we keep growing?
It's a little difficult to answer that question only because I think that's a long period of time and the world that we're all playing in right now is so different than it was even just
five, six, 7 years
ago. In large part because of, well, a couple different factors. I wasn't going to say to a certain degree because of the changes that Whole Foods has gone through. But also just that, you know, the world is a different place so dramatically different.
And digital, I mean, the digital, way that people shop for
the
food
fact
is
that you have so many brands just within less time than that, you know, the last 2-3 years launching exclusively DTC and and exploring different channel strategies and it's for years at this point it has not been necessary to follow that well-worn path for a very long time. You know, if you had an organic brand or a natural clean ingredient brand, that sort of path was go to your local Whole Foods, talk to the buyer on the floor of the store. They had the authority to make product decisions and put product on the shelf. And if they liked what you were bringing to the table, they might put it on the shelf in their store. You go all in there and support that your product there. If it goes well, you know, end up talking to one of the local foragers or or John directly, and you know that you expand to a couple of stores beyond your local location, and then to the whole region, and then to a handful of regions, and then more broadly, and that gave you the credibility to go talk to other retailers. Like Whole Foods was the proving ground.
Which, by the way, I mean, I know that things have changed. I'm going to just challenge one thing. Because I understand that there are all these digitally native brands now and that, like, the game has changed and the way people buy food is changing and 20% is going to be online by 2025, yada, yada. I still like that well-worn path. And for a brand like ours, that actually is the well-worn path. And it kind of is, it still works. It's like, I don't know. Someone told me a long time ago in my brick and mortar business that your annual sales shouldn't be less than 10x your rent. So if, you know, you get it. And all these rules have changed. There's so many things that have changed in the business, but that fundamental rule isn't really going anywhere. You know, I mean, I think what you just said, even though it sounds a little bit almost hokey, it's actually the way to build a really good business. You know, you work out all your problems when you're small and you keep growing and growing and growing.
1,000%.
You know, so.
And that's to go back to your original question. I think that's a mistake that, especially these days with so much money being channeled into this sector, I think people, it's very easy to lose sight of your original goals, your original mission. It's very easy to be redirected in what your, you know, what your operation should be and what your financial, what the financial expectations should be. Because at the end of the day, like, we're, you know, I know nothing about the software industry except for the fact that it's not tangible.
Tech isn't food.
Food is tangible.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people involved
and
in
sunshine.
In bringing it to
Yeah.
Weather, insects.
Yes.
people, trucks that break down.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do talk about that a lot here. I'm a little bit of a Luddite, and I bang my fist on the table a little bit. At the end of the day, you can't have valuations on food products the way that you can on tech. And right. I think a lot of the venture money has sort of like come in and they're like, just go big and go big fast and, make your mistakes on the fly. And that's easy to do in a certain industry. It's mm-hmm. very hard to do mm-hmm. unless you have a mm-hmm. lot of money to make those mistakes
right.
in food. And you're right. There is pressure. You know, if your valuation of your company is based on, 3 to 5x your sales, then your goal is to get those sales right. up as fast as possible so you can get more money for the next right. thing that you need right. to do, which kind of is counter to like slow and steady wins the race and like focus on each account right. and build those velocities. Mm-hmm. And, there's got to be something kind of in the. So would you say that the mistakes that you've seen are people trying to go too fast too mm-hmm. soon?
100%. Yeah.
And also maybe letting other people tell them what their businesses should be. And,
yes.
And
which I'm sure is an extraordinarily difficult thing to realize is happening to you in the moment.
Yeah.
But that's, I think from the outside, especially in the buyer seat at Whole Foods, being on that side of the table, that's the refrain that would come up time and time again, especially with smaller, earlier stage brands
right.
that we were trying to shepherd and cultivate. That's frankly, that's why the local forager role was created.
Yeah.
Was to be a resource for some of these brands that, and it's one of many, many ways in which Whole Foods led and was on the vanguard of fostering brands that would be alternatives to the mass market CPG right. that, might try to sort of retrofit their way back into
right.
this channel that was growing so rapidly when the conventional options weren't. I know it's hard. I know, we're in a position right now where the community involved in Just is a small one and
right.
private one.
Well, that was
so
one of the things I was going to ask.
We don't actually have that kind of pressure from an external VC structure,
right?
Which is good.
Yeah. I mean, because you're in a great position to be able to take, the flip of what you were saying were sort of like the liabilities, the flip or the assets, right? Mm-hmm. Know who you are, know what your brand stands for. Yeah. Expand in a way that makes the most sense to you and your brand and your value system.
Yeah. And I think in large part because of all of the money coming into this industry, it's a gold rush happening. Like I think there were a couple of brands early on that made headlines for the kind when they either went into some sort of partnership or were acquired by mm-hmm. a big CPG brand, and those numbers are impressive.
Yep.
But again, how many you look at Expo West and the thousands and thousands and how that show has grown so much just over, the last handful of years.
How many of them are actually
it's a tiny fraction, right?
Yep.
There's a gold rush thing happening but those brands that are continuing to make those kind of headlines are brands that have been around for a decade at this point.
Yep.
And they've really put their time in and have really put in the effort and the thought and have made mistakes and recovered from them and learned from them.
Right.
And it doesn't happen in two
overnight.
Or 3 years.
Right.
It doesn't. Really have to be respectful of that
process.
Timeline and that process.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to, because it's even, I was just talking about like going from like a few stores to more stores, all within Whole Foods, and then to regions and then global and mm-hmm. then other, conventional. And, mm-hmm. It takes a while, even when you sit down and you're like, yes, this is who we are and this is what we're doing. It takes a long time to like actually see all the tentacles of that mm-hmm. and really figure out, what your identity is and how it how it translates to different forms mm-hmm. of communication. You can't write a manifesto, launch a product in 500 stores, and then have it just all come together. You right. also aren't just, you're just not going to be able to buy right. the consumer love that right. you need to build. It's just, 100%. I mean, at least in my opinion.
Especially with food. Again, right. it's too, you know, we live in a world where it's very easy to see through something yeah. that's just a smoke and mirror
you can probably see
statement.
Poor thing. You probably walk in the store and you're like,
I will say though, yeah. that one of the things that as far as like how the dynamic has changed and that, yeah. you know, talking about that path from Whole Foods to, a broader grocery, footprint, brick and mortar grocery footprint, that's changed in the sense that there are, I think, many, many more channels to, yeah. for brands to consider. And that's exciting. I mean, that's been really exciting for me yeah. in my current role to realize the degree to which we can build a successful business outside of right. that conventional channel. But that also has everything to do with the kind of product
right.
we have.
Right.
I don't think a fresh our sauce. Strategy yeah. would apply in, yeah. Yeah, in your case.
Well, I want to take a quick break, and then I want to come back and start talking about Just. And I do want to talk about that sort of channel strategy stuff, because I feel like it's not something that we've really touched on a lot on these shows. And people say brand, you know, and retail and distribution and channel, and, you know, it could be a little confusing. So I mm-hmm. want to go through it.
Sure.
So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. In the Sauce is brought to you by Oatly, the vegan, plant-based oat milk originally from Sweden that's now making their oat milk on this side of the Atlantic. About 30 years ago, in a small town in Sweden, a scientist invented oat milk, and everyone thought he was totally crazy. But remember, back then, vegans were weirdos on the fringes of society. Unlike today, when vegans are everywhere and include some of the world's most famous weirdos and non-weirdos on Earth. Actually, it is true that today more and more people in the U.S. and around the world are starting to understand the benefits of eating and drinking plants, so their bodies feel good and the planet can cope better with the impact we humans place on it. So here's a sort of deep question. If 30 years ago people thought oat milk was a ridiculous idea, imagine how different people's beliefs about food could be in 30 years from now. Are we going to be looking back on our barbaric meat-eating ancestors of the early 2000s? Anyway, since this is an ad for Oatly, I should mention that one easy way to go more plant-based is just to switch from cow's milk to oat milk. It tastes really great, it foams really well, and you can just ask the baristas at Haven's Kitchen how popular it is. To find out more than you'd ever want to know about oat milk, go to oatly.com. That's OATLY.com. Or look for Oatly on Instagram at OATLY. Hi, I'm back with Kara Rubin, Vice President of Brand and Product Strategy at Just Water. So we're going to skip ahead to, you consulted a little bit, you helped some brands, you got out of the Whole Foods side and onto the brand side, and then you kind of got recruited for Just.
Yeah, Ira Laufer, who's our CEO, he and I actually did some consulting work together, mm-hmm. and he was approached about taking over the CEO role of Just and asked me to join him.
Yeah, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. And you were brought in specifically, like, to do what? I mean, what was your sort of, like, your job description?
There wasn't a job description that was presented to me. I had, you know, it was an opportunity that I had been waiting for and right. sort of a dreamy, super dreamy scenario yeah. where, you know, we had worked together and Ira had this opportunity arise for him and he said, come do this with me. You can do whatever you want.
Right, which is so cool. And what did you want to do?
Well, you know, that's why I spent time doing the consulting work that I did, because mm-hmm. I left Whole Foods. I knew a handful of things I was certain I didn't want to do.
Right.
I didn't know for sure. I had a sense, but I didn't know for sure the answer to the question, well, what do you want to do?
Right.
So I gave myself a little bit of time to do that learning. And, you know, I think, you know, coming back to those, like, hindsight on my what's gotten me to mm-hmm. where I am, I think I have a decently well-balanced brain for things that are analytical and creative both.
Yeah.
And that's always been in the back of my mind that I wanted to learn more about how to really build a brand and go deep in a brand. I think, you know, that my time at Whole Foods, I certainly had an understanding of what makes a brand successful at retail from a very high and broad level.
Yeah.
But I was looking for that opportunity to go deep and really make it happen myself.
Right.
And then, you know, my title is brand and product strategy. So I oversee marketing and I also oversee product development. And I felt pretty strongly about wanting to be involved deeply in that part of the process, because that's where my passion truly lies, is ensuring that, you know, if I was going to be involved in not only building a brand, but building the substance behind a company, which is the products that we make.
Right.
I wanted to have some influence and ownership over exactly how they are made. And I can talk a little bit about how we developed our infused line, which is one of the things I did from the start.
That's very cool. Let's talk a little bit about Just Water. You know, it's like you can see it on the shelf. I mean, the thing is, like, from a brand perspective, it's fantastic, right? Because it's these bright, pretty boxes of water. Mm-hmm. The font is cool. It says Just. You know, I think that it's an interesting place to come in into the bottled water world, you know, and I think you guys have done a really good job sort of saying your first choice should be, if you have access to good municipal tap water, you should drink it. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of you who need a better alternative to the plastic bottles that are out there, mm-hmm. here's why we're better.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you better?
Just is 100% spring water from upstate New York, which we source sustainably, packaged in a plant-based bottle. There are 82% of the materials that go into this carton start out as plants. The trees that go into making the paperboard come from FSC-managed forests, and the cap and the shoulder are made from sugarcane.
Right.
And because of that, because plants are renewable, they can be regrown, they pull carbon out of the air as they're growing, because so much of the material in this carton start out with those inputs, ultimately the carbon footprint of this carton is lower than any other packaging material in the market today.
Do you think, I mean, speaking about branding and like getting the message out there, I mean, you know, our pouches, the way you recycle our pouches is through TerraCycle, mm-hmm. right? They're mm-hmm. not municipally recyclable. Mm-hmm. From a like net fuel, water, mm-hmm. carbon, all of it, significantly less, you mm-hmm. know, negative impact on mm-hmm. the environment than a glass jar.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found it hard? I find that it's a very long way of sort of saying, because people, mm-hmm. the first thing they say is, are they recyclable, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, well, it's more nuanced than that. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than that. But by the time I get there, I've lost them. So now I'm just like, yes, through TerraCycle,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any specific way of getting that messaging through? Or like, do you talk about it in a certain way?
So we talk about this every single day.
Yeah.
We're all of our discussions about how we want to communicate about Just and what Just stands for are these days coming back to exactly what you just touched on.
Yeah.
And we just did a collab with Allbirds, and
uh-huh.
I think they're interested in talking about the same message. The bigger conversation needs to be about anything, a product,
right.
a material, clothing, the full story of an item's carbon footprint in its entirety.
Yeah.
And that's, in order to do that, you have to take into account everything that goes in on the front end at the beginning, what happens in the middle.
Distribution. Yep.
Exactly. And then what happens on the tail, how it gets used.
Yep.
And what happens on the tail end. So, it's very much a narrative with a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yep.
And, you know, we talk about the fact that notion of reduce, reuse, recycle was originally intended to be a priority ranking.
Right.
So the first and foremost is about reducing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once you've done that, look at what you do need to use in your life and reuse it.
Yeah.
And then recycle it when it's done, when you're done with it, when its useful life is finished. I think we've been conditioned over many decades at this point to focus solely on recycling.
Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, it's understandable as individuals, like that's the way you can understand that you're making a contribution, right, that you're doing things the right way.
Yeah. The problem with it, I think, is that, you know, my kids, for example, I have five teenagers, right? They know 75% of our waste is actually recyclable. And then they know that probably 20 to 25, if that, of that 75% is actually recycled, mm-hmm, when you put it, mm-hmm, in the bag. Mm-hmm. And there's a cynicism that comes out of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes they're like, Mom, honestly, like, you're putting it in that bag, they're going to, mm-hmm, put them all in the same place. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a shame in a way that we've, mm-hmm, gotten so reductive about the messaging that people are starting to see the holes in it, and then they think the whole thing is a sham in a way, mm-hmm, you know? And, mm-hmm, so I think there is room, but you're also educating people on where the water's from, yeah, and, yeah, what a B Corp is. There's so many things to educate on, and it's hard, yeah, when you also just want to sell your product, yeah, and make people happy.
Right. Right. You know. And, you know, that was another thing that I was tasked with when I first came on board at Just, was to overhaul the packaging design.
Oh, really?
You did
a great job.
Involved the side panels of our carton, more so than the front.
Right.
Because we wanted to create that, you know, that brands aren't built on data at,
right,
the end of the day. Brands are built from a consumer standpoint, at least, on creating an emotional tie.
Mm-hmm.
You want to feel something when you are, you know, incorporating a product into your life. You want to feel, yep, something about it.
Yep.
So we did a lot of work to think through that, to explain these details that can get really wonky really quickly and go, yep, down these rabbit holes that no one wants to know about. And you think, like, it's
right,
sad and depressing, and I don't want to think about it.
Yep.
How to distill all that and make sure that we're touching on those issues, but also conveying messages like, Just is about goodness and shining light on goodness in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Just is about doing the right thing as best you possibly can.
Right.
And acknowledging that we are all human.
Right.
Because it's very easy
to say, I'm not going to be perfect, so I'm not going to do anything, you know?
Right. But this is an opportunity for your kids. And you know, it's interesting that you say that, because as you were saying what you just said about your kids, I was excited actually to think that, you know, that cohort is really able to see through.
Absolutely.
And it's, you know, friends of mine who's have kids that age too, or, you know, just anyone who's a little, quite a bit younger,
mm-hmm,
gets this.
Yep.
Right away. Gets what Just is,
yep,
on an intuitive level. And they're immersed in that notion of an entire carbon footprint in the same way we were immersed in the idea of having to recycle,
yep,
from an early age. So I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of potential to, and this is where I, you know, my current role is really gratifying and interesting to me, to think about how do you distill this message that's so layered.
Right.
And you can go in any one of these different, yeah, any one of these avenues, and tell a really interesting, compelling story. We have to prioritize and
right,
pick among them. But at the end of the day, if you go down any of them, if you spend time, you know, navigating through our website, again, it all comes back to doing things the right way.
Right.
And being super transparent about it and honest about it. And I,
right,
think that's the way that we
connect with the people that 100% are going to love what
because
they're buying.
We will say things like what you just said.
Right.
If you have access to good, clean drinking water and your tap water, and you know, A, know that you're fortunate.
Right.
B, drink it.
Yeah.
Don't buy a carton of Just.
Right.
But if you are in a situation where you don't have that access for whatever reason, it might be temporary, it might not be.
Right.
Just is a better option than,
right,
plastic, aluminum, glass.
Right. Amazing. Okay, so going back to sort of like the strategy piece.
Mm-hmm.
So when you came in, were you also sort of like thinking about what we think of as like channel strategy, like where this is going to work best, how we're going to launch it? and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you break that down a little bit for some people listening? Because my understanding is that there's like natural, there's conventional, there's club, there's mm-hmm. mass, there's like food service, there's mm-hmm. e-commerce. Like, mm-hmm. are those all sort of like different channels? And do you prioritize within them and then think about how you're going to kind of like what's the process?
Right.
And is that right?
For us, we generally, yes. Mm-hmm. We think about it in the way you just described. You know, when we came on board, the company was struggling, mm-hmm. honestly, and there was a lot of adjusting of that channel strategy in terms of thinking about the proportion of attention and resources that were given to certain strategies. I think, right. you know, again, for beverages, the historical well-worn path
yes.
Was to saturate the yep. market and get your product into giant case stacks on the floor of every grocery store you yep. possibly could.
Every bodega,
which means getting in with every DSD.
Yep.
And that's
direct
service distribution.
So just to clear it up for anyone listening, that's, you know, the difference between like a UNFI or if you listen to Chris from Dora's. So DSD will, they kind of act as a broker in mm-hmm. a way for a lot of the stores that they can get to. And they also act oftentimes as like a merchandiser. Not that they're going to be straightening your product on the shelf, but that they're going to be actually putting your product on the shelf directly as opposed to dropping it off at the warehouse.
Right.
Okay. Carry on.
So you guys decided not to do that. Right. Yeah. Well, we didn't pull back entirely, but we pulled back significantly particularly from that DSD channel because it just wasn't viable financially.
It's very expensive.
That's one thing I think you could probably talk to that as well as I could around the expenses related yeah. with dealing with distributors.
And especially in this region.
That's the upside to thinking about a direct model. There are pros and cons to all. And, right. Coming back to the idea that you have to create your strategy and stick to it.
Yep.
And if you build a realistic business plan on that strategy, stick to it. And it should, it should over time.
Right.
come to fruition.
So I was, I feel like just recently, like I was at a little hotel when I dropped my daughter off at college, or I was at the airport, or I feel like Just is in more, you know, place. Like, I don't feel like I see it in bodegas or in end caps Mm-mm. in grocery stores. I feel like I see it in, for lack of a better word, like food service yep. type of scenarios.
Right.
Is that a channel strategy?
We the first several months when we came on board 2.5 years ago was realigning mm-hmm. that strategy and thinking about where we'd see the most stable financial benefit.
Mm-hmm.
We already had a couple at that point in time. We already had a handful of partnerships in that kind of space. We call them the mission-aligned partnerships.
Right.
Just has a very clear mission. I was talking about it earlier. There are plenty of organizations of one sort or another that have set out sustainability goals for their organizations, and those are the conversations where it's a relatively easy sell.
Right.
It's, you know, we're not out there trying to sell solar panels or new, you know, whatever, right. name your sustainable technology that's hard to
right.
grapple with from either an infrastructure,
right.
you know, cost standpoint.
Right. It's a one stop. This is an easy thing for you to
swap
out.
Exactly.
Right.
So we have a number. We've had quite a lot of success in those conversations, which from the outside, you probably could define it as a food service channel.
Right.
But we think of them as mission-aligned partnerships, because that's the common denominator between an American Airlines, which has Just in all of their in all of their lounges around the country, to the Houston Zoo. We work with a handful of zoos and aquariums around the country, which is fantastic.
It's a great, I mean, for founders out there, it's a great way of thinking a little bit outside the box too, right? Like, you don't think of what your product is a direct swap for and go to places that buy a lot of that. As opposed to trying to build account by account and store by store and door by door, right? I mean, it's so you were going to say something about the new flavors and how you did something. So I want to hear about that.
I developed them.
How did you know it was time to develop them? Like, when did you decide to innovate, or was it always in the plan?
That was something, it was always in the plan.
Right.
It was important when we came on board to expand the footprint that Just occupied on the shelf at the retailers where we were having some success, including Whole Foods.
Right.
To build that offering and since we've launched, we are seeing that happen. The all of the boats, and as far as our SKUs, all of them are improving in terms of performance with the addition of the infused options on the shelf.
Yeah. When we introduced two new SKUs, the velocities of the original three SKUs went up. Is that just a normal thing that happens because
typical.
You're taking more space and you look like a bigger, badder brand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the original blue bottle got more attention once you added the green and the yellow and the orange. Okay, cool. I just wanted to clarify that that's what you meant.
But I felt strongly coming into this role that I wanted to have some influence over the development of new products because of that, you know, that was something that I was very much immersed in having come out of Whole Foods and aware of the more nuanced kinds of conversations that's going on in now less so, but you know, even 2.5 years ago or so, more like corners of this community around ingredients.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not talking about something that has a very complex ingredient deck on the back panel. But I didn't want to take the easy route. I wanted to do right by this brand and really try and set a different bar. So I didn't know exactly what that meant. I did know that I didn't want to just default to natural flavors. I partnered with someone I'd met through, you know, doing some consulting work and worked with him to formulate what became Infused using ingredients that are called essences. And essences are basically just distillates. So you boil water with, you know, we are lemon, tangerine rinds, mint leaves, blackberries, cherries. You boil the water with the plant matter, collect the condensation, that's the result of that process, and when it reconstitutes as water, it's intensely flavored with the plant matter you started with.
That's so cool.
It is very cool. And it's not new technology, but it's not easy. It's also not easy to work with, and it's not the cheapest option.
Because you have to capture steam.
Yes, and it's also, it doesn't work really well with all flavors. So, like, we are never going to have, you know, watermelon doesn't, the process doesn't work very well with, particularly with very, very watery fruits.
Interesting.
So, you know, we have to kind of rein in expectations around that. Like, we're never going to be a brand that has 27 different flavors. But we were very selective about the flavors that we did feel would be successful and would be accessible. We launched with lemon and tangerine, and we actually had a third with our initial flavor offering, apple cinnamon, which was unusual.
Yeah.
It was awesome. But unusual
It didn't quite
survive.
We all have our babies that are like, wait, what do you mean? Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, I have hopes of at least revitalizing that one as a, maybe a seasonal
special. It's funny, like, our nutty lemongrass is kind of not our winter SKU, and it's my favorite flavor, like hands down. And sometimes when people say, okay, we'll take your top three, and it doesn't make it into the mix, I feel like baby's been put in the corner. Like, I get this, like, nobody puts baby in the corner. I'm like, get her in there. But you can't, you know, they can't all be, you know. So anyway, I feel you
maybe
on that.
Maybe over time.
So that's great. So, I mean, it's amazing. And so, you know, going for just like a couple of seconds, because then we're going to wrap up. But can you talk a little bit? So brokers, right? So, because this is where, like, I love having you here, because you have the actual experience of like being on the brand side now, but you also just have this breadth of experience of like being in this ecosystem for a long time. So how do you actually sell your water into places? Do you have different people that sell it into those retail accounts, and a different team to do the mission aligned accounts, as you call them, and different people to do e-commerce? Like, are there different sales teams? Is it one sales team? Does everyone, do you go to, I mean, how do
right
you do
now,
it?
Yeah. So right now we do have, a director of e-commerce, and his, area of responsibility includes our Amazon platform, our DTC platform, and all of our digital media that we're doing. And he's done a fantastic job in less than a year of really catalyzing a tremendous amount of growth in that space and presence, because his goals are not just to not simply to just drive sales and revenue, but also to raise brand awareness.
Right, because it's the place where you can speak directly to your consumer.
1,000% Amazing. It's more efficient. It's And for a startup, you know, I guess we're not going to have time to touch on this, but you know, we are super fortunate to have a celebrity element to
we
this
didn't
brand.
Even get to it's so interesting though if you think about
Come
it
back,
it's really
we'll do a part
interesting
two.
But it's cool that the in all the talk that we've had about the brand we haven't really talked about the fact that Jaden Smith started it right because you Which can is, have a celebrity start your brand, but at the end of the day it needs to have a team and it needs to have people that love it, and so, you know,
and I think we are incredibly fortunate that we have the best possible scenario, I think, for having this dynamic in the mix, and that it was Jaden's idea. He and his family are very genuinely dedicated to making something of Just. And they're not just spokespeople.
Right.
They're not paid spokespeople. We don't pay influencers.
Right.
Maybe we'll get there at some point, but we'll do it in the context of advertising because that's where it is.
Yeah.
And we are, we're fortunate though that we have that kind of genuine.
Yeah, you have a safety net in a way too.
Yeah, and it's also a way to help us tell our story, and amplify it. But we do it very selectively. We engage them very selectively.
And is there a team that's actively trying to open retail accounts?
We have digital, and we have our VP of sales who is primarily focused on brick and mortar and that mission aligned channel between our VP of sales and our CEO.
Right.
All of us, frankly, you know, drove the relationship with American, which is something that was really exciting.
That is very cool.
we're a very, very small team. And I think the reason why I brought up the Smiths was because I was going to say, like, despite the fact that they are part of Just, you know, we're like any other startup. We still have a very small budget.
Right.
You know, just because you have people who have a lot of means and a lot of resources, it doesn't mean that we have those means and resources within our own, the confines of our business.
Absolutely.
And we still are responsible for, you know, creating a viable business.
Yes.
So we're working with limited means. We have a very small team. We don't have a field sales team. That's something that we haven't invested in because, again, coming back to that idea of channel strategy and prioritizing where you're going to put your resources, that's just something we don't do demos. We are rarely. And if we do, we work with the team from Pinata, Josh Want, the yeah. Force Brand spinoff, they're fantastic and super flexible and enable us to, when we have an activation, we yeah. don't do demos in retail right. environments, but when we have an activation and we need brand ambassadors,
you have
there,
a gig, have, as they call them. Yeah. We exactly. just interview them because, you know, as we expand, we definitely need more people yeah. to be doing
they're
stuff.
They're great. And that's, yeah. you know, that's very, I think, money well spent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they are folks who come in and you know, do a little bit of a training right. with them, and they're able to speak to
and represent you well. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
So, you know, we don't have. It's basically like one or two people right. who are concentrating on any one of these channels.
But it's interesting that it's not the typical, like, you know, ready to drink kind of model, which I think in and of itself makes it different and kind of interesting, and mm-hmm. you know. I don't know. I think the whole thing's really, really fun.
I think, you know, it's, you know, it's interesting to market a product like water because we're all human. We all have to drink water.
Right.
Right. So, and the way I define our target market is, basically our consumer is someone who believes that they can vote with their dollars.
Yeah.
And that cuts across all demographic, socioeconomic, any sort of, you know, standard issue marketing metrics.
Right.
And I feel strongly that we should keep it that way.
Yeah.
And at least to a degree, at least to a sort of a strategic right. understanding, because this is meant to be a brand that should be accessible because we all are invested in this, right?
Yeah.
What Just stands for, taking a step in the right direction, the impact of this product of any one particular carton of Just is multiplied, and there is a real positive impact to it. You know, again, the one carton of Just is a 74% reduction in the amount of carbon impact compared to a plastic
right.
bottle. If we all hold hands and take this same step together, then it represents a significant yeah. positive impact on the environment, yeah. and I don't think that should be winnowed down to right. any sort of particular demographic.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's, you know, that and then ends up impacting the kinds of conversations we have about how right. we're building brand awareness, how we're talking with our various accounts and different channels.
Yeah.
And
it's, I mean, thank you so much. I think, you know, there was a lot in here for mm-hmm. a lot of people mm-hmm. to think about. And, like, I think the product development and brand going together and, like, really knowing who you are and really having sort of your why, you know, mm-hmm. your big why behind mm-hmm. it. So, I mean, it's funny because I have a feeling I know what you're going to say. What would be the, and this is the last question because I'm getting the signal, what would be the biggest sort of singular piece of advice you could offer someone who's starting a, you know, consumer packaged good food company right now?
Yeah, it's that stay focused.
Yeah.
And define
why.
Why
yeah.
exactly. And keep coming back to it. Like, find a way to keep reminding yourself. Like, pick a person maybe outside of your company structure and say, like, this is my reason, this is my North Star.
Yep.
Remind me of that
yeah.
every so often.
Yeah.
Because you know, I'm sure you know this, like you start your yeah. own business and it's all of a sudden you're doing accounting and HR and this, and you lose sight of yeah. what's really important.
Yeah.
You need to remember what's important.
Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you so much for being here. Jeet, thank you for being our engineer today. And thank you for letting me go a little bit over time. Keep listening to In the Sauce. We have a bunch of awesome, all different people from all different parts. I have someone who does like logistics coming on. I'm so excited. But lots of different people to help. And Kara, thank you so much for your time
this
and for all of your thoughtfulness. And I'm definitely going to go online and get myself a case of
awesome.
Just. In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you.
Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.